President Trump's sweeping tax cut bill has now passed the House of Representatives, and it's one step closer to being signed into law. The proposal, if it gets signed, would completely reform and reshape our federal budget because it calls for $4.5 trillion in tax cuts and then an additional $2.5 trillion in spending cuts. Now that the bill has passed the House of Representatives, it would normally go to the Senate, but the Senate got impatient. They've already passed their own version of a budget framework, which means now the Senate and the House just have to work together to come up with one version of this bill, one version of this plan. That way we have a single plan to take to the president. But the key points in this $4.5 trillion of tax cuts include, number one, extending the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which was passed in 2017, because it's set to expire in the end of 2025. If it does not get renewed, tax rates for pretty much all income earners would go up in 2026, but they want to renew these tax cuts. It wants to remove taxes on tips, it wants to remove taxes on overtime income, and it wants to remove taxes on Social Security income. Now, I've already made a whole video explaining the tax cut proposal, so I'm not going to go over all of that again here, but if you want to watch that video, I will link it for you down in the description. But what's also interesting in these bills is the $2 trillion in spending cuts by the government, because, well, that's going to have a massive impact on our economy, which is one thing that I want to go over. Now, I want to remind you that all these changes happening in our economy, well, a lot of them are happening faster than expected, which is why on March 11th, I'm hosting a workshop where I'll be covering the changes happening through the Trump economic proposals, through DOGE, through tariffs, through technology, and how all of these changes create a unique investment opportunity for you. It's a completely free workshop. I'm doing it twice on March 11th, once in the morning at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and again in the evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So if you want to join, all you have to do is register, because there is a limited number of people that can join me live. So if you want to join, I have the link for you down in the description below. So let's talk about this for a second, because obviously running a balanced budget is not really a political thing. I don't think anybody, or I shouldn't say that, most people are not opposed to running a balanced budget, which is the government generates money from taxes and then it spends less than what it generates from taxes. But right now, we're not doing that. We're running a deficit. In 2024, we had almost a $2 trillion deficit, which means that the United States government generated $4.9 trillion in taxes, but spent almost $2 trillion more than that through debt. And this is where it's a problem. Now, there's a lot of different solutions or ideas on how to fix this problem, and that's where things can start to get political. But the thing that I want you to understand here is this proposal to cut spending, while it's clear the goal with that is to reduce the deficit, I want you to understand how this can impact the economy. Because if we take this one step back, remember, our economic system runs on spending. Every dollar I spend is a dollar somebody else earns. Every dollar you spend is a dollar of income for somebody else. So your expense is somebody else's income. And the largest spender in our economy is not Apple, it's not Amazon, it's not Tesla, it's the United States government. Remember, in 2024, the government spent the $4.9 trillion that it generated from taxes, plus almost $2 trillion more. So we're talking about close to $7 trillion worth of spending. And so when we talk about the government cutting expenses, that means the government would be spending less money. And if the government is spending less money, it's good for a government budget side, because that means that there are less expenses in the government. But that also impacts the economy in a different way, because every dollar the government doesn't spend is a dollar that does not enter our economy. Because if the government starts to cut expenses, that could mean that they fire people. It could mean that they cut departments. It could mean that they cut funding. Well, all those things have an impact in the economy as well. But the flip side is if they don't cut those expenses, there's also an impact to that as well. And I want you to have a full 360 view of this, because unfortunately, there's a lot of emotion out there when it comes to government spending. And this is where it's very important for you to understand, how can the government cut expenses? Now, of course, just like anything else in a budget, in order to balance your budget, you can do one of two things. You can increase your income, or you could cut your expenses, or you could do both. Because right now the government's spending more than what they're bringing in. When it comes to increasing income, remember, the United States government has one source of income. It's tax dollars from taxpayers. And we have a huge tax cut proposal that is almost passed. So it does not look like the government is looking to increase the income through tax cuts, although you could potentially increase your tax income if the economy were to grow significantly. Because if the economy were to grow, businesses were to make more profits, and people made more money, then people would be paying more money in taxes, because every time people make more money, taxes are going to be higher. The other side is you can cut expenses. Well, again, cutting expenses could include layoffs. It can include cutting benefits. And that has a trickle effect, which I want you to be aware of. For example, in this bill, one of the things that has been discussed is the House Energy and Commerce Committee is tasked to find $880 billion in savings. Well, one of the things that they oversee is Medicare and Medicaid. So the concern is, well, if they cut expenses, does that mean that people's benefits will go down? Does that mean that people's welfare or unemployment checks would get affected? Does it mean that people's Social Security checks would get affected? Does it mean that people's healthcare, health insurance on the government would be affected? And what you want to remember is, anytime we talk about balancing a budget, you got to look at the income and the expenses side. Every dollar of government spending is a tax, whether the government spends it through debt or they spend it through an actual tax. And so there's really no way around it. Either the government's going to have to raise their taxes to fund their expenses, or if they have to cut the expenses, they have to cut the benefits, they have to cut the employees to pay the expenses. And you might say, well, isn't there a way to win-win where the government can keep employing people? The government doesn't have to fire people. They don't have to cut departments. They can keep giving out aid to everybody. Can't we do that and not have to raise taxes? Well, sure, absolutely. And that's what we've been doing. If the government generates, say, $5 trillion in taxes, and they raise their expenses because they want to keep spending money, they want to give money out in whatever way, shape, or form, it doesn't really matter, that money has to come from somewhere, right? It's not invisible. Somebody actually has to receive a check to spend that money. Well, the government has to borrow that money. Where do they borrow that money from? Well, they can borrow that money from China and Japan and other foreign countries, which have already lent the United States a lot of dollars. Or they can borrow this money from the Federal Reserve Bank, who is a central bank here in the United States. Now, you've probably heard me say this before, but although they're called the Federal Reserve Bank, they're actually not federal. They're not a part of the federal government. They're not a reserve because they're not sitting on any cash reserves, and they're not a bank because you and I can't go there to deposit money. But they have the ability to essentially print money. So the Federal Reserve Bank can create this money out of thin air and lend it to the United States government. And now the government has this money to go out and spend. They can continue to pay people salaries. They can continue to fund whatever you want to fund. And it seems like all problems are solved. Except, let's take this one step further. If the government can just work to print this money, why do we have to pay taxes in the first place? Why don't we just keep 100% of our incomes? That way, well, we have more money to buy and stuff and pay for our bills, and the government just prints their taxes to do their expenses, to do their spending. That would be even better, because now I have more money to spend and more people have jobs. The government can give more subsidies. They can do whatever they want to do. Well, there is a consequence to this. There's a cost to this. And I said this a lot in 2020 and 2021. But the most expensive kind of money is free money. Because if the government were to do that, that is still a tax. Now it's just a hidden tax. And that hidden tax shows up in the form of inflation. Because when you produce more of these dollars, which are not backed by any physical currency, remember, our paper dollars, what we call money, is not backed by physical gold or silver or anything like that. It used to be, but in 1971, President Richard Nixon took the dollar off of the gold standard, so our dollars are no longer backed by a precious metal. Well, if that's the case, that means that you're printing more of these dollars, which we believe have money. It's a fiat currency, meaning the government says that these dollars, this currency, has value. Well, if you keep printing more and more of that, what happens is the value of each individual dollar goes down, effectively causing the price of things to go up. That's what inflation is. Now, this is not a new concept. This has been happening for decades. It's kind of funny because my first video ever to go viral on YouTube was a video that I released in 2016 explaining how inflation works. And what I talked about is this 2 to 3% inflation that we're seeing. Again, this is 2016. Is reducing the value of your savings, of your dollar, and that's what keeps a lot of people broke. It's what keeps a lot of people poor because they don't understand that this is happening. And so the wealthy are investing their money, becoming wealthier, versus the average person is staying broke because of this. I'll link that video for you in the description as well in case you want to read it. Well, sorry, watch it. But things got amplified in 2020 and 2021. In 2020, we had COVID hit, and that changed our economy forever. We printed between 2020 and 2021 about $5 trillion. We injected that money into our economy. It made people feel rich in the short term. We were talking about this live when it was happening in 2020 and 2021. If you are joined or subscribed to Market Briefs, which is my free financial newsletter, we talked about this then. If you were watching my YouTube videos then, I talked about this then. That money is going to make you feel rich. And it did in 2020 and 2021. People felt rich. You had stimulus checks, you had unemployment checks, you had PPP loans, you had grants. Everybody felt rich. And then people go and start spending the money. And a little while later, you start to realize that $1,000 isn't what $1,000 used to be because the value of the dollar goes down. So what is that? That is the hidden tax. But who's paying the price? It's consumers. All people are consumers. Rich people are consumers, middle class people are consumers, poor people are consumers. Every single person needs to eat, every single person buys clothes, every single person buys a car. I mean, everybody's a consumer. But some people also benefit from this. Who are those people? It's the investors. Because the investors are the one that get to see all the benefit. See, consumers get hurt from inflation because now you have to pay more dollars to buy your guac at Chipotle. But investors see their asset values rise. And unfortunately, most people in America are just employees and consumers. They're not investors. And so when you see inflation happen, that means the salary that you're getting can't buy you as much house. It can't buy you as many groceries. It can't buy you as nice of a vacation. And now we're really starting to see the impacts of that. Well, at the same time, the people that are investors grew their wealth. Between 2020 to 2025, the reported inflation number, and I say reported because the real inflation for a lot of Americans is actually a lot higher, but I'm going to stick with the reported numbers. Reported inflation is about 23%. The median household income in America grew by around 20%, which means that the median household saw a 20% raise from 2020 to about today. It's estimated because we don't have the final 2024 numbers, but it's estimated. So that means the median household, the average person, did not see their incomes rise fast enough to keep up with inflation. While at the same time, the stock market, over that same time period, grew by around 80%. This is what it means when people say the wealthy are getting wealthier, the average person, the middle class, the poor are becoming poorer. Why? It goes back to this concept of inflation. And so when it comes to government spending, you know, people want to politicize it, which, you know, I understand why people do that. I don't try to do that on this channel because I want you to just understand what's happening from a financial perspective, because I just want you to be smarter with money so you can take better care of yourself, your family, and your community. I don't care if it's a Democrat or a Republican in the White House. I just want you to know what's going on. But when it comes to government spending, the reason why this is important to understand and why deficit spending is so important to understand and why national debts are so important to understand is because these things have an impact on inflation, and that inflation hurts the average person. To fix that problem takes pain. And unfortunately, there's no way around that. It's kind of like recessions. Our economy needs recessions. You know, you might say, Jaspreet, what a horrible thing to say. Do you not understand that people get hurt in recessions? People lose their houses in recessions? I get it. If you don't have a recession in our economic system, the way it's designed, because we have a credit-based economy, well, you're going to have much bigger bubbles and you're going to have much bigger depressions. And so if you don't have recessions, you're going to have a much bigger problem. You're going to have much more pain. You're going to have much more issues if you don't have those recessions. So that's that. But when it comes to inflation, to really solve the inflation issues, to really solve this problem, to protect people in the future, you have to think about how are you going to prevent future high inflation numbers. And if inflation comes from government spending, because all government spending is some form of tax, either that tax can be passed through Congress, or it can be a hidden tax, which is inflation. If you don't want the inflation, unfortunately, there's consequences to that. If you don't want governments to cut expenses, there's consequences to that as well. Newton's laws, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. It's the same thing with finance. And you have to understand how this works, because if you don't understand, you're going to get caught up in the emotions and you're never going to be able to find the opportunity. But the reality is, no matter what's happening, there's always opportunity in these changes in the markets. And that's what every financially savvy investor is looking for. People want to get caught up in the politics. They want to get caught up in the emotion. They want to get caught up in arguments on Facebook and all that stuff. It's not going to help your bank account. I want you to understand what's happening so you can take better care of yourself, because the reality is you got to still pay for your groceries, and groceries are not getting cheaper. If that's the case, well, what do you do? Of course, you can work to earn more, but you can't out-earn inflation. This has been proven through time, not just through 2020, but through the last number of decades. The average person cannot. Some people can. If you have a very high-paying job, you've generally seen those people be able to out-earn inflation. CEO pays have out-earned inflation, but the average income, the median household, has not. But investors have, and anybody can be an investor. Our economic system is designed for investors to win. Hate it or love it, that's the way it works. And I say this not to offend you, I say this so you understand, because I didn't grow up learning this stuff. Our economic system is designed to benefit investors. What do I mean? Money flows to investors. When you go spend money at Chipotle, who is the biggest beneficiary? It's not the employees. I mean, yeah, they get to keep their job if people are eating there, but the extra dollars are going to the owners of Chipotle. That's who's getting all the benefit. Who's the owner of Chipotle? It's the investors. It's the people that invest in the Chipotle stock. I'm not telling you what to invest in, okay? I'm a random guy on YouTube. I'm not a financial advisor. Investing has risks. Never blindly listen to a random guy on YouTube, okay? Do your own due diligence. But when people spend money, the ultimate beneficiary are the investors. Number two, inflation benefits the investor. I explained this to you in this video. When you have inflation happen, who wins? It's the investors. Because those extra dollars that have to be spent when groceries become more expensive, when flights become more expensive, when cars become more expensive, those extra dollars ultimately go into the hands of the owners, who are the investors. And our tax system also benefits the investor. How do I know that? Well, as a licensed attorney who spent a lot of time studying the tax law, who's now your attorney, what I can tell you is our tax code taxes you differently based off of how you earn your money. If you are a W-2 employee, you pay the highest tax rates that our tax code has to offer. It's called ordinary income tax rates. Some people call them earned income tax rates. Same thing. Those are the highest tax rates that our tax code has. You also qualify for the least amount of deductions. When you become an investor, you fall into a different bucket of income category. You're no longer earning money. This is considered portfolio income, sometimes passive income, depending on how you're generating your investment income. This investment income, your capital gains, comes with lower tax rates and potentially higher tax breaks, depending on how you earn that money. This is how our economic system works. It is designed to reward investors, but we're never taught this. That's what I want you to understand. People get caught up in the emotions. They want to fight and argue. I just want you to understand what's happening. That way you can take better care of yourself, your family, and your community. And again, I have a bunch of resources for you down in the description. If you want to join me on my workshop on March 11th, It's going to be a ton of value. I would love to see you there. Market Briefs is my free newsletter for investors. And of course, if you want to watch my video from 2016, don't mind my the way I was speaking back then, because I was still learning how to talk on YouTube. That was the first video to go viral, but I have those resources for you down in the description as well. And with that, I'll see you on YouTube tomorrow.